The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 24 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1978 season. The Kingdom were reeling from successive defeats to Dublin. Redemption would arrive in some style. During the course of the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry's surprise success of 1975 was subsequently expected to herald the arrival of a new golden era for the county. However, the Kingdom were stopped in their tracks in 1976 and 77. Kerry lost the 76 final and 77 semi-final, both to Dublin. Kerry were stung by those losses to the men from the capital. Having received the adulation that came with the 75 success, the mood had changed. Team trainer Mick O'Dwyer and his charges were under pressure. Then Kerry forward Mickey Ned O'Sullivan remembers how quickly the tide turned.
It's amazing when you win, it is the gospel. It's accepted. If you lose, whatever methods you were using, they're not accepted. Every year, the team that wins in All-Ireland, that's the yardstick going forward for the next year. 76 and 77, we lost, and the knives were out. But for the support of the then chairman of the county board, Gerald McKenna, Mick would have fallen by the wayside, and maybe the history wouldn't have been realised.
O'Sullivan's teammate, Mikey Sheehy, felt Kerry were unfortunate when beaten by Dublin in 77. Sheehy admits the consecutive defeats to the Metropolitans hit hard.
76 and 77 was a ferociously bitter learning curve for us. Like, you know, 76 final, Dublin came back and they had a point to prove. And the 77 All-Ireland semi-final was won, you know, they all said it was a great game of football. I don't know if it was or it wasn't really. A lot of matches that Kerry lose tend to be great games, I know, by the media. But I just think that game could have gone either way. We had chances to win that game. Could have killed it. And, I mean, they got a goal, fair play. They got two goals in the last 5 minutes to win the game.
Mickey Ned O'Sullivan had missed the 77 campaign. He took a year out after getting married. Upon his return, O'Sullivan found himself attempting to displace a formidable quartet.
The team was more or less established when I got back. And I was trying to get onto two positions. Joe Power was in one of them. Pat Spillane was in the other. Mikey Sheehy was in another. And Johnny Egan was another. So I was a sub for all four.
O'Sullivan was not the only man who would have to play the patience game. Jimmy Deanahan was in for a rude shock in the wake of the 1977 loss to Dublin.
I was on the beach here with Pat Spillane. Pat was teaching in Listowel for a short period. We were walking the beach here and we came up to the Castle Hotel for the drink afterwards, and the Evening Herald was there, and it was announced in the Evening Herald that four of us was dropped for the league that year, including Spillane and myself and Joe Power, I remember, and Paddy Mahoney. We were just dropped off the panel totally. At the time, you just accepted it. Obviously, you wouldn't have been too happy about it. I got an opportunity in the Munster trial, I remember, in 78. And, of course, because of the fact that I played rugby all winter, my fitness levels were very high, so I was back on the team again.
Those consecutive defeats to Dublin raised serious doubts about Kerry's ability to incorporate a certain level of physicality into their game. The side's football abilities could never be questioned. Pat Spillane is in no doubt as to the turning point in this regard. Spillane cites a fundraiser in early 1978, an exhibition match in the USA, which turned out to be anything but a friendly.
Raising the money for the Sister Consilio Fund in Gaelic Park. It was the day we decided to lay down a marker. It was the culmination of a belief that the difference between Kerry and Dublin was that physicality and playing to the edge. And we felt that, you know, when we fouled the Dublin player, we pulled him by the jersey, it was a free, whatever. And when they fouled us, Jesus, it was a decent foul. They'd hit you hard and that, whatever. And we felt that we had become soft touches and they were walking over us. And that day in New York, we decided to match fire with fire. We'd stand up to them. It was a brutal, a filthy game. A few players sent off. Jimmy Dean and broke his nose. I broke my nose. It was a filthy game, but we won. And from there on, we'd laid down a marker. We knew we weren't going to lie down in front of Dublin. Mentally, we were a much tougher team. April or May or something like that, horrendous conditions, but that was the turning point. And from then on, we never looked back. We never, ever looked back after that.
The side for the 1978 Munster Championship opener against Waterford was backboned by the majority of those who had served the county for the previous 3 years. 10 of the 15 from the 1975 success began against Waterford. Jimmy Deanahan, John O'Keefe, Ogie Moran, Paddy O'Shea, Tim Kennelly, Paddy Lynch, Ger Power, Pat Spillane, John Egan and Mikey Sheehy. Pat McCarthy and Mickey Ned O'Sullivan would feature later in the season. Brendan Lynch had by now retired, while Ger O'Keefe did not feature during that campaign. Paddy O'Mahony was replaced in goals by Charlie Nelligan, injury curtailing O'Mahony's first team chances. Jimmy Deanahan was sympathetic to O'Mahony's plight.
Unfortunate really in Paddy O'Mahony because he was an excellent goalkeeper. In 76 he ruptured his Achilles tendon in the All-Ireland final, and that really, I suppose, put an end to his career. He had a great kick out, he had great accuracy from place ball, very, very dependable. You felt always, you know, a game situation, and he had a very strong voice as well, so he communicated well with his defenders. And of course, Charlie Nelligan, I suppose, was one of the greatest goalies ever. It was just unfortunate for Paddy that Charlie Nelligan came from the minors more or less directly into the scene.
Paddy O'Mahony himself admits to a frustrating time watching Nelligan between the sticks.
It's different now because the panel is, there's 30 in the panel and everyone's kind of together, you know, and at least five players are brought on in each game. But at that time, being a sub was a pain in the butt. I don't know if any of you read the book It's Only a Game by Eamon Dunphy, but he brings that out in a strong way, saying that he always hoped that the player that was on the Manchester United team instead of him would get injured and he'd get on. I was a bit like that myself, I have to say.
Paddy O'Mahony's only appearance in the 1978 Championship was as a sub after Charlie Nelligan got sent off in the final. A young man by the name of Owen Liston was selected at midfield for the game against Waterford. Liston, always acknowledged as the final piece of the Kerry jigsaw, would go on to have a debut season to savour. However, had events worked out otherwise, one can only speculate what Liston's impact on the inter-county scene would have been. The aforementioned Paddy O'Mahony has revealed how one of O'Mahony's own clubmates was also called in for trials.
Mick O'Dwyer brought in Tim Regan from my own club, Spo, who was an international basketball player before he tried the bomber. Why? Because Tim Regan was 6'4" and he had this idea that bringing in a big player on the full forward line would be a help. Unfortunately, Tim was a bit slow, and so then he found the bomber down in Waterville, and we never looked back after that. He was Dwyer's saviour because Dwyer was under pressure at the time. I mean, when he brought Bomber into us, we kind of laughed quietly because he was definitely a stone and a half overweight, you know. But I never saw a player to be as committed. And he brought a certain excitement to the panel because he's an exceptional character. He's so likeable, you know, the big soft bomber, you know. He was always there and he tried so hard in training, and he changed around that Kerry team, and he was definitely the factor that Kerry went on to win four more All-Irelands from 78 on, because he was the key to where it all happened. There was no other team in the country could handle him at the time because he could turn fast, and it was a great move by Dwyer. It was a saviour, there's no doubt. And I suppose he did exceptional training, because I believe that Dwyer trained him down below in Waterville privately as well.
Liston was making the step up from an All-Ireland winning under 21 side. He admits that it took him some time to get up to speed with the senior counterparts.
I got picked as a sub for the under 21s. We were to play Clare, and Sean Welsh got injured and wasn't able to line out, so they started me a corner forward. I remember that day I linked up well with Jack O'Shea. I played good enough. Mick O'Dwyer was at that match. The main thing was that Mick saw something and brought me in training with the seniors that year, and I was so far behind fitness wise that if he hadn't done that, like, I wouldn't have played with Kerry, I'd imagine. And he persisted, he encouraged.
Owen Liston was part of the Kerry side which won the 1977 All-Ireland Under 21 Championship, the county's third successive title at that grade. Mick O'Dwyer persistence with Liston had stunning results later in the season, vindicating O'Dwyer's faith in this raw talent. Liston had previously tried out when Seamus McGarrett was training the county minors. Liston left an impression on McGarrett that night, albeit not the desired one.
He stood out in the sense that he could catch a ball from the air from anyone, but his problem was when he landed with it. He was a bit awkward. He was a big young fella, and very often you see fellas like that, they're late maturers when they're big as underage players. I told the fellow that brought him in, will you leave that poor man at home the next night?
Mick O'Dwyer credits Ogie Moran with the discovery of the player he feels is the most significant find in Kerry football.
Well, it was Ogie Moran actually that recommended him to me. I was inside one evening and we were going to have a trial game on a Monday night, and I said to Ogie, would there be any player out there in North Kerry that you could recommend or bring in for the trial? So he said, there's a big fella in Ballybunion, all right, but he's a lazy boy, he says. I don't know would he come in or not, but I said, right, fair enough. I said, bring him in. And luckily enough, the very same player, would you believe it, came to Waterville as a teacher about 3 months after. So I got hold of him in Waterville and I put him through the mill in Waterville and I put him through the mill with Kerry, and I can assure you he was the greatest find, I think, to that was ever found in Kerry football.
Owen Liston and Vincent O'Connor were selected at midfield against Waterford. Injuries prevented the pair from lining out. Jack O'Shea and Johnny Mulvihill deputised. Once more, O'Shea had benefited from the misfortune of others.
Uniquely, I suppose, my first actually match I played for Kerry would be a National League game up in Navan, and something similar happened. I think a few of the lads got delayed coming to the game in one of the cars, and I actually got put in to play my first league match in something in the same circumstances. So, I wasn't selected at the beginning of the championship in 78, but I got my break that day and, I held on to my position from then on.
Tommy Doyle and Sean Walsh, who both featured in the 1977 All-Ireland semi-final loss to Dublin, also started against Waterford. John Egan pointed in the opening minute. Kerry were four in front, with Mikey Sheehy and two from Ger Power also on target. Waterford had their first score after 11 minutes. Kerry, despite some wayward shooting, proceeded to add 11 more points to their first half tally. A Mikey Sheehy goal in the final minute of the period meant Kerry led 1-15 to 3 points at the break. Pat Spillane had goals in the 20th and 27th minutes of the second half. He finished the game with a personal tally of 2-5. Mikey Sheehy top scored with 2-8. Kerry won by 4-27 to 2-8. Attention focused, however, on the form of the defence and the concession of 2 goals against a modest Waterford side. Fast improvement would be required for the provincial decider. Owen Liston arrived on the inter-county scene for the Munster final of 1978. His introduction, a full forward, saw Sean Walsh go to midfield. Johnny Mulvihill made way in the only change in personnel from the season opener. Cork had the ball in the net just 6 minutes into the encounter.
Ray Cummins driving it high into the Kerry square. Declan Barron to Jimmy Barry Murphy. He fouled. He's got the goal. Jimmy Barry Murphy, but the referee is penalising him. Or he's penalising the Kerry fullback. And he's a penalty.
Sean O'Connor, the Limerick referee, was right up there. And the high ball came in from Cummins. Jimmy Barry Murphy got it. He was fouled. Put the ball into the net. Referee called it back.
And a goal for Cork.
Denny Allen was the man, Gary, I said. Denny Allen came up and took that. Hit a low bullet of a shot, low into the corner of the net.
That goal put Cork 2 points to the good, 1-1 to 2 points. When Cork pointed in the 11th minute, it was their last score of the half. Kerry were starting to take over. Pat Spillane was denied a goal, a superb save from Billy Morgan, tipping his shot over the crossbar. The Kingdom had edged 1 point in front when, on the quarter-hour mark...
Jack O'Shea with the ball now for Kerry. Jack O'Shea being helped there by Mikey Sheehy. Across here, broken inside by Ger Power, and he rifles it into the net by Ger Power.
Great goal by Power. High ball came in, the broke out. Power put in the first time, bang into the net past Billy Morgan. Great goal.
Two successive points by Tommy Doyle extended the gap. Kerry 1-8, Cork 1-2. The signs were ominous for Cork, and sure enough, 7 minutes before the break...
Here's a chance going through in Power across the bomber, down to Sheehy, and into the back of the net. Brilliant combination by Kerry.
Your Power to Bomber, Bomber to Mickey Sheehy, Sheehy back into the back of the net again. Wonderful play by Kerry. Great combination. Lovely goal.
Kerry went in at half-time with an unassailable advantage of 2-10 to 1-2. Kerry managed a single point in the first 17 minutes of the second period. Cork, though, had only managed 4 of their own, so the gap was merely down to 8. In the 53rd minute, Kerry struck for goal number 3.
Ger Power to Owen Liston. Back again to Ger Power. That's Tommy Doyle. And that's another chance for Mikey Sheehy. And that's another goal for the Kingdom.
Yes, indeed. Mikey Sheehy in a great passing move. Threw the ball, literally threw it into the back of the net. Great goal for Kerry.
The scoreline now stood at 3-11 to 1-6. Kerry proceeded to concede 2 goals, but the issue was never in doubt. Kerry beat Cork 3-14 to 3-7. Kerry's Tommy Doyle and Cork's Tom Creedon were sent off late on. The newspapers at the time bemoaned the number of fouls over the course of the 70 minutes, 58 in total. Kerry were unchanged for the All-Ireland semi-final against Roscommon, which was played at a rain-swept Croke Park. John O'Gara had Roscommon in front within 3 minutes. A minute later, the Westerners looked to be in for a goal chance, but Paddy Lynch cut off the through ball, a lucky escape for the Kingdom. Pat Spillane levelled for Kerry, but the Kingdom were playing second best to their opponents. Roscommon, though, failed to make their midfield domination count when it came to taking their chances. Tommy Doyle, sent off in the Munster final, went off injured before the 20th minute against Roscommon.
This ball came, high ball came out the middle, and some 5 or 6 of us jumped for it. I just caught it and thought I heard a crack or a kind of a pull of my arm, but thought nothing of it. I got another ball and kept jogging away, and next thing this high ball came again within a few seconds again, and I went and, Jesus, I knew I was in trouble. My arm just went dead. My right side went down. I came down right away. I looked, I see blood pouring out of my arm and all on the side of the jersey, and a bone sticking out from my skin. And I was down at the Richmond Hospital before the game was over. And the big operation at the time, I was in hospital for about 2 weeks. above in Dublin. I still have a pin in a plate in it to this day. It's about 8 inches. I still have a plate in it there to this day. That was in 78. And it, God knows it took me about 6 or 7 months before I got right with it.
It was not until the 20th minute that Kerry had their second point of the afternoon. A stunning sideline kick from Mikey Sheehy landing over the bar. The next score, after 25 minutes, was more telling.
Pat Spillane going through, getting it from Power. Spillane going through his last possession. He's going to rifle this one into the roof of the net. Pat Spillane.
Yeah, scored by the Tipper Norman. Last possession of the ball, got it from Power. It was on the ground, running away in front of him, soccer style. He pulled at the ball, soccer style, bang into the back of the net. Great goal.
Kerry were leading 1-3 to a point. Each side had one more point in the first half. The teams swapped ends with Kerry ahead, 1-4 to 2 points. The rain at half-time was so heavy that the Artane boys band performed in the Nally stand instead of on the pitch. Only a fine save by Charlie Nelligan prevented a Roscommon goal in the opening stages of the second half. Two Ger Power points in the 42nd and 43rd minutes put Kerry 1-6 to 3 points to the good. Power's hat-trick of scores arrived in the 44th minute.
Paulie Lynch, in now to Jack O'Shea. Jack O'Shea near the sideline, selling dummies left, right and centre. Still Jack O'Shea, going through, looking up, sees this movement in front of him. Jack O'Shea with a lovely ball inside for Bomber. Bomber back to Egan. Egan outside, fumbled inside, lost inside, and here comes the shot! And it's gone into the back of the net, Weishi, and Ger Power has got the goal.
Yes, indeed, a great movement by Kerry. Ger Power was finishing up the back of the net, but a great run by Jack O'Shea. He sold dummies all over the place. If he got a penny for every dummy he sold, he'd be a millionaire. And the ball finished up inside in the square. And Ger Power pulled at the ball.
With the gap now at 9 points, 2-6 to 3 points, Roscommon's race was run. The Connacht champions refused to lie down, however, and kept pressing. They brought the gap down to 6 before a narrow escape for Kerry, just 10 minutes from time. A John O'Connor shot seemed destined for the net, but Charlie Nelligan tipped his effort onto the crossbar and over for a point. Roscommon's slender chance of catching the kingdom was now gone. Mikey Sheehy put over 3 points from freeze in the closing 10 minutes, while sub Patty O'Mahony also left his mark on proceedings.
Power gathers it again now. Plays it inside to Mikey Sheehy, inside to Patty Mahony. Patty Mahony into the net, and another goal for Kerry.
Yes, indeed. Patty Mahony, the sub, Charlie Mann, was at the end of that brilliant passing movement. Mikey Sheehy got the ball, gave to Patty, and Patty turned around and just threw the ball and half-fisted into the net.
The kingdom won 3-11 to 8 points, and Kerry were through to the All-Ireland final once more.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
For the fourth consecutive season, they were to face Dublin in the championship. Kerry had won the 75 final, lost the 76 decider, and in 77 went down to Dublin at the semi-final stage. This season, Dublin eased past Down, 116 to 8 points in the last four. Jimmy Deanahan says this game was looked upon as a watershed moment in Kerry football, and for the team of that era.
At that stage, we knew that it was the end of the team and we didn't win, because it would have been 3 losses in a row to Dublin. It was unthinkable that time that Dublin would beat Kerry on 3 occasions. It was a move on within the county to have the wire removed after 77. And that would be from people who felt that there was somebody else said to do the job better at that particular time, and that's Kerry football. If you're not winning in Kerry football, they want your head and that's it, irrespective of who's there. And so there was enough of the pressure on Mico at that particular time, and also on all the players, because certainly we would be left on the panel if we hadn't won, because we'd have been seen to have been losers.
Injury meant Tommy Doyle was omitted from the Kerry side for the final. Ogie Moran moved to centre forward. Paddy Lynch was moved from the corner to wing back. Pat Spillane's brother Mick was faced with the daunting task of making his championship debut in an All-Ireland final. This was not the first time Kerry captain Ogie Moran had led his county out at Croke Park. Moran was team mascot in the 1960 final, which Kerry lost to Down. Early on, it seemed as if Moran would once more be leaving Croke Park as a loser. Kerry managed just one score, a Mikey Sheehy point, in the opening 25 minutes. During that time, Kerry played second fiddle and looked as if they would be on the receiving end of a heavy drubbing. Jimmy Keaveney had put 5 points over by this time, with Bernard Brogan adding a sixth for Dublin. 5 points down, with 10 minutes to half time, Kerry were looking for a lifeline. John Egan provided it.
Here's Jack O'Shea inside now for Pat Spillane. Pat Spillane inside now with John Egan. Penny Cullen has left his goal, and John Egan flicks it into the back of the net. A goal out of nothing, we see for Kerry.
Yes, indeed, Jack O'Shea to Pats Milan, and Pats Milan, what wonderful vision he has. Great vision altogether, but it was Jack O'Shea out the field who picked it up with a beautiful pass. He gave in to Pats Milan, and Pats Milan ran on. Saw John Egan going inside the game, came out, got the ball. Teddy Culligan came out right at top of Egan, and Egan just kind of punched and half threw the ball, and it finished up right beside the back of the net in front of the canal in, would you believe?
Well, Paddy Cullen caught for that one. He probably had to leave his line, but John Egan nipping it into the back of the net. It was a goal that Kerry needed.
This goal of Egan's is almost forgotten about due to a more famous forthcoming moment. The importance of Egan's strike is not lost on Mikey Sheehy, though.
It was a funny game, and that they were looking good at the time. The Bombers' back was nearly gone, and he was looking to come off, but John Egan got a goal, which certainly settled us down.
Ger Power, too, is fully appreciative of the lifeline given to the team by Egan's goal.
We've really been beaten and been beaten well, and just John got a break and got a goal. Like, that was, you know, I think all the goals are important, but that just got us back into it, like, you know.
Egan and Jack O'Shea pointed to draw Kerry level 7 minutes from the break.
Cullen once again out to take this kick out. This very young and spiritual Kerry team driven out towards the middle of the field. Up they go for it. Jack O'Shea breaks it down into the hands of Ogie Moran. Ogie Moran has got Pat Spillane outside him, chinking his way past 1, 2 or 3. Jack O's in space. Jack O with the kick, and Jack O'Shea over the bar. That's a great score from the man from Carseville.
Yeah, lovely score by the Jack O'Shea, and it was Pat Spillane once again who set him up. Jack O was all in his own. Pat Spillane got to around two good up in defence. Ryan Mullins tried to block him down. He punched the ball into Jack O. Jack O'Shea hit a rocket of a shot. No, he wasn't going for the goal, I'd say, because there were two defenders who put him straight through over the bar. Lovely point. Just 1, 2 to 6 points.
Yeah, 1 point in the goal. Kerry trailing, and again Jack O'Shea showing his supremacy in the middle of the field. This is his midfield partner, Shawnee Welch. Shawnee Welch plays it outside there. That looks to be John Egan, and it is John Egan tearing it along the sideline. What a man, is so built and so strong. John Egan inside for Pat Spillane. Pat Spillane might flick this one. The whole Dublin defence going top, and then Sean Doherty's one of them. Spillane flicks it outside to his right to Egan. Egan didn't even look at the post. He turned instinctively, and another cracking point from John Egan.
Lovely point by John Egan. It's 1, 3 to 6 points, and this is John Egan. He's the man. Gay O'Driscoll, the corner back, don't know what to do. Egan is playing ducks and drakes with Gay O'Driscoll, and he's getting that ball. He's soaring his possession of the ball. What a unique style he has. Wonderful point. He started it, he finished it. It's 1, 3 to 6 points.
Jimmy Keaveney put Dublin back in front, 7 points to 1-3. 3 minutes from the end of the period, one of the most famous sporting moments in Irish history saw Kerry take an unlikely lead into half-time.
Jack O'Shea, shoulder to shoulder he goes with Bernard Brogan. He looks up, he put his hands on the top of the ball. It's lobbing inside the goal. Ger Power is there, so to his Mikey Sheehy. Ogie Moran, but Paddy Cullen is going to come out and have this one in control. And he soccer-style plays it outside himself. He hand-passes it out, Paddy Cullen, and that's outside into Robbie Kelleher. But the referee's whistle is gone. Mishy, it's a free into Dublin for Kerry.
He's giving a free. I don't know what that free was for, Gary, but
and what a free! Oh, what a free from Mikey Sheehy! He has chipped Paddy Cullen. Cullen ended up in the corner of the net. An unbelievable free.
That was an absolute free. I never saw anything like that before, Gary. That goal. What an unbelievable goal, because Paddy Cullen was arguing with the referee about the foul. I don't know what the foul was for. It was committed inside the 14-yard line, and you can't take a quick free for a foul committed inside the 14-yard line. All just the referee, Mikey Sheehy, just took that free quickly, and he just chipped the ball over. The goalkeeper was arguing.
That was
unbelievable.
What was the free for, though, Ishii, initially? That's the question.
Gary, I couldn't see what it was for. I don't know what it was for. But I tell you this, I have never seen such a delicate chip, such a bit of opportunism in my whole life. And there's only one man to do that, and that's Ishii. Unbelievable stuff.
All parties involved in the incident have maintained that there should never have been a free in the first place. To this day, the victim of the Paddy Cullen foul, Ger Power, has his doubts.
Well, I think I had more or less my back to the ball, and he just touched me or something like that. Like, you know, there was an incident before, and he didn't give a free, so maybe he made up for it there, but it was a crucial decision, anyway.
Mikey Sheehy, the main benefactor of this apparent foul that never was, concurs with Power's statement.
There was an incident with himself and Paddy Cullen earlier on, and the referee didn't see it, and the Kerry crowd in the stand and the Hogan stand did, and then a couple of balls came in to Paddy. No, the referee knew that he had missed it. The linesman missed it. The Kerry crowd were kind of half during Paddy when he got a couple of balls, and then one, this famous one came into him, and he picked the ball. Clearly, I've seen it so many times now. He picked it up, and the referee gave a free, and Paddy was as baffled as anybody else. I was baffled myself, and Robbie Kelleher was more baffled than anybody else. So he kind of handed the ball to me in disgust.
It was a masterstroke by Sheehy. As I saw it, Ger Power simply had no notion of getting out of Cullen's way, and the Dublin man more or less brushed off him as he passed him out of his way back to goal. But referee Aldridge must have seen something I didn't see, And all I can say is, God bless his eyesight.
3.5 decades later, Kerryman reporter John Barry maintains the free should have been given the other way.
The funny thing about that is that it was a crazy decision to give Kerry a free, because Paddy Cullen did absolutely nothing to Ger Power. In fact, you know, it should have been, if anything, a free out to Dublin. The Kerry crowd had got on to him for some, the referees, for some decision he made against Kerry just before that, and he decided to give Kerry this totally unwarranted free, and fair play to Mikey. Mikey was just an absolute genius, who was always thinking 3 or 4 moves ahead of everybody else.
Instinct is one thing that cannot be taught. Had most other players found themselves in Mikey Sheehy's position, would they have attempted what he tried? Probably not. Sheehy admits he still is at a loss to explain why he took the kick.
There certainly was a gap, and I said, here goes, and I suppose to this day, I don't know what made me do it. You know, it was maybe just an instinct thing. I don't know. Paddy, you know, was we've often spoken about it. No, in fairness to Paddy, we're great friends, the two of us, but it took him a long time to talk about that goal, and I wouldn't blame him, because I get fed up about talking about it, and I actually scored it, so I can imagine Paddy's attitude about it. But Paddy to this day would be still, I know that for a fact, that he would argue it wasn't a free, and I would have to agree with him 200%. Like.
John Egan believes Cullen may have played a far bigger role in proceedings than he realised at the time.
Ardridge gave a free, which was no free, I think, like looking back on it now, but that doesn't matter, because it's actually what happens. What actually has football and sport destroyed is television and replays, because there's nothing perfect. Whether everything is right, whether everything is wrong, there's nothing can be all right, nothing can be all wrong. And a certain thing's going to happen in sport anyway, same as life, that there's nothing, like television tries to perfect everything, to perfect a referee, or perfect players. To tell the truth, it was no free, but it was an altercation happened between Ger Power and Paddy Cullen earlier. The referee didn't take action. So it happened again. Ger Power committed an offence on Paddy Cullen. It was no free, in fairness now, to Dublin, but Ardridge was refereeing the game, and he had his back to the ball, and he was booking. He went to book Paddy Cullen, and Mikey Sheehy put down the ball. And the big mistake Paddy Cullen made is he went to defend the ball. If he stayed with the referee, he went back to defend it, and he was caught running back, and the referee allowed a goal, which was extraordinary. Like if you look at it now and looking back on it, it was extraordinary he allowed it, because he did his back to the ball, the referee. But anyway, there was another goal for Kerry. That was 2 goals in a short time, so the whole game changed then.
Then Kerry goalkeeper Charlie Nelligan admits to having a degree of sympathy for his fellow netminder, Paddy Cullen.
I didn't have it particularly at the time, but I remember chatting to the umpire, and I thought Mikey, actually, it was raining. There was a misty rain in Croke Park at the time, and I kind of lifted a beep out of me when I saw Mikey going for the shot one. I said, Jesus, what's he up to, you know? The umpire says he's after sticking it in the net, and I didn't believe it until I saw the green flag. But like, it was a mighty chance to take, but only Mikey could do a thing like that, you know.
Kerry supporter Jerry Savage recalls Paddy Cullen's reaction to Sheehy's kick just as fondly as the goal itself.
Paddy was arguing with the ref, and Bobby Killer came up and he handed the ball to the free taker, who was Mike Sheehy. And Paddy Cullen was still talking, and then he see Mikey going for the ball, and he ran for the goals. And it was a bit late for Paddy, because the ball was inside the net before Paddy got into his position. And Con Hoolan at the time, a great writer, described it very well. He said it was like a woman that was talking to her neighbour at the gate, and she smelt the burning cake she had on, forgot about it, and she ran. And so the very same as Paddy Cullen.
Sheehy's goal has understandably gone down in GAA folklore. Journalist Donald Keenan was among those fortunate enough to witness it in the flesh.
Only a player of the brilliance of Sheehy would even think of that. I think that's what made the likes of himself and Egan stand out, in that they did things that others wouldn't even think about. Now, whether it was a legitimate goal or not, I'm not too sure. Mikey always smiles when you ask him. Paddy Cullen even smiles when you ask him. But it was just the audacity of what he did. Looking back on it now, I was here when it happened, but I can still hear Michael O'Hare's commentary, because it has been repeated so often.
That goal was the last score of the first half, after which Kerry led 2-3 to 7 points. The Kerry dressing room was a happy place to be in, given the events in those closing first half minutes. Hard to believe, given what had just happened, but Mikey Sheehy says his goal never featured in Mick O'Dwyer's half-time chat.
He never said a word to me about the goal, but I could see what he was thinking. You know, he kind of just gave a bit of a wink over at me, okay, you know, but I knew what he was thinking, because Mick was always kind of, you know, take the points, the goals will come, and I would have said that it was a chance that if I had missed it, I'd say he'd have shot me. he'd be kind of saying, you know, why didn't you take the point, you know, but I think that was, you know, silently gone through his head, you know.
Owen Liston was perplexed by the turnaround at the end of the first half of what was his debut senior All-Ireland final.
I knew Dublin were good. I'd seen them playing. This was their fifth All-Ireland final in a row. They'd won three, and it was a defining match, and I remember the first half, we were 6 points to one down. I remember saying to myself, Jeannie, they are some team, and your confidence levels were dropping. Have no doubt about it. They were just destroying us. And next thing, we hadn't played at all. The next thing, I remember a high ball came in and I caught it and gave it off, and a goal came off it. And I felt, geez, at least I'd done something. And then I remember there was confusion, and I saw the ball going into the net, and I knew we'd got a free, but I went in at half time, didn't know whether the goal was allowed or not, and here we were inside at half time. I think we were 2 points up, having not played, and I think the psychological damage that that goal did to them, it was very hard for them to come back after it.
The second half was barely 90 seconds old when Liston stamped his authority on proceedings.
So then it's a free out to Dublin, and it's taken over into the far side of the field, and again it's gathered there by Paddy O'Shea. Paddy O'Shea drives it long. Owen Liston punches it inside, a big tall man, he's causing trouble inside there, but the Dublin defence so far are coping well with him, and it's going to be a free out to Dublin. But no doubt Rishi Owen, the bomber Liston as they call him, he's causing trouble. He's the young man at the edge of the square.
He is indeed, yeah. What a find he has been for Kerry, there's no doubt at all about it. He's a big huge man like Tim Kennelly playing the centre back, and this kind of weather suits him, and it's a tough half game. Kennelly and Liston, as you said, playing very well.
Mikey Sheehy to Owen, to Jack O'Shea with the pass inside, and the bomber has gone inside. The bomber, well, we just mentioned him, he's gone inside Sean Doherty. What a finish by Owen Liston.
Goal by the bomber, wonderful goal by the bomber, and it was all came from out the field. Jack O'Shea once again involved, and it took his time, saw the bomber just chip the ball over to the finger. Bomber got the ball, the goalkeeper Cullen came out, and bomber just jumped up in the air. He fisted the ball into the back of the net past Cullen. Great goal and great awareness by Jack O'Shea. Great goal by the bomber.
Well, I wonder did Jack mean it or not, but it certainly ended up into the lap of Owen Liston, and he's towering over Sean Doherty inside there, and that now has made it 3-3 to 7 points.
Mikey Sheehy is not sure whether Jack O'Shea's ball in was a pass or an attempt at a score of his own.
You know, it's funny when your name is on the cup that day, is that Jacko, I think, was going for a point. That's a fact, and the ball dropped short and straight into Bomber's chest, and Bomber buried it. So, I mean, I think after that goal, really, it was all over, you know.
Owen Liston, in search of an All-Ireland medal, feels his job was made easier by the events at the end of the opening period.
All that was in my head was to win that match. I didn't care if it was by a point or 10 points, just so that I'd have an All-Ireland medal. That was the motivating thing. I wanted to have an All-Ireland medal. When I was so close to it, Jeannie, we were prepared to put our head in the line, and I knew that Dublin were as well, but we were highly motivated. We were very well prepared, and I think the psychological damage that was done to Dublin, that must have been very hard for them to come out in the second half.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
Kerry had now scored as many goals as points. They led 3-3 to 7 points, a 5-point advantage for the Kingdom. Jimmy Keaveney pointed for Dublin to make it a 4-point game. Kerry hit back, scoring three times between the 38th and 40th minutes to consolidate their match-winning position.
The kick-out now coming again from Kerry's Charlie Nelligan, out towards the middle of the field again, and a real battle for supremacy back there, and it's gathered again by Shawnee Walsh. Shawnee Walsh plays it outside to Pat Spillane. Pat Spillane plays it inside here, and that's another chance, and a brilliant point taken by Ger Power.
Yeah, Pat Spillane eventually finished up with Ger Power. He got right through the Dublin defence. The Kerry forwards seemed to be able to get through the Dublin defence. Sean Wilkes was also involved in that. Sean Wilkes and a big job. Pat Spillane, Bill Powell got right through. No one to beat, but Cullen, really, he could have goaled that, but he blasted the ball, just careered over the bar.
Yeah, he could have taken it, but Kerry had back again, and now it's Mikey Sheehy from the kick-out. Mikey, three solos, landing it high, landing it well, and landing it on top of the net. What a point from Mikey Sheehy.
Beautiful style, beautiful poetry in motion by Mikey Sheehy. 3-5 to 8 points from just under hit 16. Remember, Kerry are attacking the railway in here in Croke Park, and when you put Mickey Sheehy in a position like that on his own, we won't stop him.
Dublin now, the All-Ireland champions are in trouble. Certainly are. The three in a row is not on, I'd say now, and Owen Liston trying to get the kick out by Paddy Cullen, but Sean Doherty saved the day. The referee is going in. Was there a foul on Owen Liston, but he's making his way in. We should talk to the umpire. penalised, is he?
Yes, he is indeed, Gary. He's given a free out right there.
Penalised the Bomber, I think, inside there actually is. So, pulling up the togs is the official, and he's going to get the free out. And it's going to be Paddy Cullen to take this one. So, 3-5 to 8 points. That's the story of it so far.
And there's Seamus Aldrich. He's the Kildare County Secretary, has been for a long time. He's the referee today.
Out into the middle of the field again, and who's gathered it? Johnny Welch. He's done well from breaks, he's done well from fielding. Johnny Welch got a right old haymaker into the back there. He filled that one, Rishi, and the referee's calling the notebook break.
He is indeed, yes, Johnny Welch. He's an outstanding footballer. Ross High got that ball, came down, and he's kind of danced and weaved his way out. There was wind coming at him. Got a punch into the kidneys, as the fella said. The referee doesn't like that. Hooks one of the Dublin players. But Sean Welch, an outstanding footballer. Great pair of hands, and lovely move by his great legs.
Paddy Lynch, who takes this one. Paddy, high goes the baller. Fields it over friend and foe. Back from power, back to the baller, in the net. On Liston, can do no wrong from Derry.
Oh, superb goal by Bomber Liston. That's his second goal in the game. The high ball came in there. Liston rose high, caught the ball, absolutely beautiful. Passed the ball after Jopal. Jopal back to Liston. Liston was running on, and he hit an absolutely rocket of a shot. It gave Cullen no chance at all whatsoever. Wonderful goal by Kerry. Great combination play there. A rocket of a shot.
It was now Kerry 4-5, Dublin 8 points. Mikey Sheehy then scored 2 points and Owen Liston another before the big man goaled again, quarter of an hour from time.
And Sean Welch battling there with Kevin Moran. And Kevin Moran, of course, wearing now that bandage on his head, but it's not going to stop him from playing, Rishi, so far.
Oh, indeed, Gary, he's a great footballer, Kevin Moran. Bandage in the head there, he keeps playing on. Another man would have gone off there, but Kerry looking good now at the moment for Kerry, but here they come again.
Oh, he nips in ahead of Bernard Brogan and inside to Ger Power, but a poor one from Power for once, but back into the hands of Ogie. Ogie Moran again out. Outside is this Ger Power who's running for it. It is Ger Power now. He launches it in around the square if he can. He's playing the 1-2 with John Egan. Egan gets away from his man. What's Egan going to do with it? He's going to hand pass it high in the air for who? The Bomber coming through. And that's the hat trick from Owen Liston. Dublin are saying he wasn't a square, but I don't think he was.
A hat trick from the Bomber, a hat trick from the Bailman. And the referee has gone in to talk to the umpire. Was he in the square? John Egan puts the ball across the face of the goal. No, I think. I think as far as I could see, he ran in from out here. He rode above the goalkeeper and the fullback, puts the ball into the back of the net. That's a hat-trick for the Bomber. That's the first time I ever saw a Kerry man score a hat-trick in an All-Ireland final. Great stuff by Bomber Liston.
In the 58th minute, Kerry goalkeeper Charlie Nelligan and Dublin's John McCarthy were sent to the line. Jimmy Deanahan temporarily took over in goal until Paddy O'Mahony was brought on. Kerry went on to win by 5-11 to 9 points. This demolition of Dublin meant the disappointments of the two previous seasons could now be consigned to the history books. Also, this side had now proved they were no one-season wonders. Pat Spillane says that was important.
Winning in 78 was always going to be fantastic because, like I said, 2 years of failures. You knew what failure was like in an All-Ireland semi-final 77. You knew what the failure was like being beaten in a final of 76. And, you know, you were filled with emotion, filled with drive that this wasn't going to happen again. You didn't want to experience. You didn't want to experience that bitter feeling, that sort of depression that surrounded you for a couple of days after the match. So 78 was great because you banished so many demons and you were able to prove as a team and as individuals that 75 wasn't a flash in the pan and that we were as good, if not better, than Dublin. Because this is the 125th year of the GAA celebrations. The people have asked watershed moment, and I've said I've one instant. Tell me one, and my one instant has always been Mikey Sheehy's chipped goal against Paddy Cullen in 78. For several reasons. One, it was a piece of absolute genius. Absolute genius. I mean, you can't coach fellas to do something that's spontaneous, off the cuff, and just showing initiative. But what that particular moment, it was a watershed moment because from then on, Kerry had a dominance over Dublin. And from that day on, that team turned, that was the turning point in making the Kerry team an average, decent team into the great team that they were to become.
Mick O'Dwyer believes that had Kerry lost to Dublin in 78, his tenure in charge of the side would have come to an end. For that reason alone, this victory is one he'll never forget.
You know, Dublin had beaten us the two previous years. They beat us in the 76 final and the 77 semi-final, and then we came in 78 and we beat them. That was one victory that really stands out in my mind, because at that stage I'd say that would have been the end of the line for me and for many people involved with Kerry if we had been beaten by Dublin that day. day. We'd been beaten twice before by Dublin, but we hammered them that day, actually. We beat them by 18 points. I think it was one of the finest displays of football I've seen in Croke Park for many a long day.
Owen Liston may not have impressed Kerry legend Seamus McGarrett in a previous trial for his minor side. However, McGarrett is quick to acknowledge Liston's role in the success of 78.
I think he was the final cog in that team. In 1975, I think their fitness and athleticism caught Dublin by surprise. I think Dublin proved in 76 and 77 that they were still a good team. That particular Kerry team, I think, matured in 78 when the Bomber arrived on the scene. He was the missing link in that team, and he completed that team. I suppose of the teams that I have seen, they would have been the team of the 70s and 80s. They would have been the best team, definitely, that I have seen.
Kerry player of the 1940s and 50s, Mick Finucane, feels Liston was more than just a target man, and that his inclusion took the kingdom to a new level.
The man that made the greatest difference to that team was the Bomber. That team was a good team, but it wasn't a great team. But when they brought the Bomber on, they were unbeatable then from there on. He gave them a height and said he was the first of the target men inside. But he was better than that. He could play out the field too.
Liston's teammate Sean Walsh also believes it's important that people understand the role Liston played.
He was a big influence on our team because he could take the ball high, low, it didn't matter. Very versatile and very skillful for a big man. If you were under pressure out the middle, you could still, you know, he had a habit of going behind the full back and he'd put his hand in the air if he wanted it high, you know. So he'd give you the options always.
Homecomings are as big a part of All-Ireland victories as the day itself. They give the county as a whole the chance to recognise the achievement of their heroes and to show their appreciation for the vast effort that goes into any given season. The journey home with Sam Maguire in 1978 afforded Charlie Nelligan the opportunity to take a trip down memory lane.
Going back in, like, to my own time as a kid, I used to love to go in. My father used to carry me to Killarney, and you'd wait at the station. You'd go in early and wait at the station to hear the train coming in, and you'd hear the bangers on the tracks, you know, it was great. And here was a young fella on that train causing the bangers to crack, you know, and it was super, you know. They were great days, and I have good memories as well. I remember my first time in 78 coming down and meeting my father on the platform in Killarney, you know, it was great, super.
One question remains from 1978. Just where did Owen Liston get his Bomber nickname from?
Many years ago, playing soccer on the beach in Ballybunion, there was a lazy fella that was hanging around the square there, Jordy Muller, and he was known as the Bomber. So sometimes I was heavy, fat young fella, I suppose, and sometimes I was called, instead of Pelle, it was Belly, kind of, and more fellas used to call me Bomber, so Bomber stuck anyway, and that was the start of it.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.